Hey, y'all, it is Connor. Okay, if you are listening to this today, Wednesday, February 26th in the year 2025, I am so excited to tell you that tonight, Gisele Bryant from The Real Housewives of Potomac is doing a live show at City Winery here in the city. It's Gisele's 21 Shady Questions, and your boy Connor is going to be there. So I would love to see you there. You've got to come. City Winery, 7:30. Go early, get some wine, get a meal, and see Gisele Bryant, the queen of Real Housewives of Potomac, live for her live show. It's going to be such a blast. She brings all the drama all the time, and you're absolutely going to love it. And if she's coming to a city near you, definitely check out her calendar on her Instagram or on just Google Gisele 21 Shady Questions. You're absolutely going to love it. While you're Googling that, Google Drama Plus, which is our Patreon for the podcast For Us Drama with Connor and Dylan McDowell, where for $5 a month, you get access to our Instagram close friends, and you get extra bonus episodes where Dylan and I chit-chat with each other about theater, pop culture, love, and life. We talk Housewives on there constantly, and Potomac ended on such a strong note with this season, and Gisele is crushing it. She had one of her best seasons ever, and I cannot wait for tonight's show. So while I'm going to see 21 Shady Questions, while you're looking into if you can go see it, definitely download a podcast of drama with Connor and Dylan and become a member of Drama Plus at patreon.com/thedramapodcast. All right. Love you so much. See you tonight. Or if this is happening in the future that you're listening, I had fun and enjoy this episode. Can't wait for you to hear it. All right. Bye.
Press play. Curtain up, and now we're in. It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. We were talking just before hitting record that my sunburn is settling. Because we're fresh back from Miami.
Oh my God, so fun. A little birthday trip for our dear friend, Poot. And yes, that is like Poot Lovato, but a different Poot.
Right.
It was such a blast. Oh my God, I loved Miami. I've, of course, been dying to go for years as a diehard fan of The Real Housewives of Miami, which, oh my God, I DM'd every single one of them ahead of my trip. This is like a window into my soul that I'm just like shooting my shot in the DMs. With anyone. It could be a man. It could be, Larsa Pippen. Actually, she's the only one I did not DM. But I DM'd every single Real Housewife of Miami, and two did respond.
That's so fun.
I was basically just like, oh my God, I'm coming to Miami this weekend with the gays and the girls. It's going to be such a blast. What should we do? And they recommended some gay spots, including, you know, Adriana DeMora did recommend that we go to a gay sex hotel, which was so
crazy.
Telling of her, of who she is personally.
But we did but we did other amazing things. I have to also say, Connor, you're showing your hand here because I feel like you do DM like reality star celebrities anytime we go to a certain city. And that's one of your tricks. So now more people are going to follow suit. But it was such a great time. We got to go to the Food and Wine Festival, which was like the conceit of the birthday. And we ate and drank ourselves silly. I mean, it was amazing.
And Anthony from Queer Eye was there.
Anthony was there in the flesh. And Bobby Flay. You know, everyone was saying they love all of his shows. I remember him from Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off on Disney Channel as kids.
Well, of course. Of course. Of course. That was pivotal.
He looks exactly the same. Like he was, you know, pumped with formaldehyde or something like that. But it was all in all an amazing situation.
Yeah, it was great. I really want to go back in the summer when it's like much hotter and maybe do like more beach stuff. But went to drag brunch at Palace Bar, went on a twist. It was just such a great time. I loved it. Loved it. And I just saw you in real life, which is crazy.
I know. Maybe we'll talk more about it on a bonus episode because there's some more fun highlights we can share.
Okay. We definitely will get into it. I know. Well, I'm so excited about our guest today.
It's always fun when we've met one of our guests previously and then we have this conversation later because the ice is already broken.
I know. And we met him at a friend of the pod's party.
Tyler Joseph Ellis, who everyone needs to go see in Chuck.
All right, y'all. Our guest today is kind of the moment. Currently starring in Dakar 2000 at Manhattan Theater Club, he continues to be an in-demand leading man. You'll recognize him from the film Anything's Possible, directed by Billy Porter, as well as for his memorable television turns. He literally made history when he was cast as the titular lead in Netflix/Dark Horse's series Grendel, which we'll get into, and One Hearts on Law & Order Organized Crime, Katie Keene, Walking Dead World Beyond, Power, Book 2, Ghost, Little Voice, and more when he's not lighting up the silver screen. You've seen our guest on stage in Tauros at Second Stage, Inherit the Wind at Pasadena Playhouse with Alfred Molina, and We Live in Cairo at ART, as well as Yale Rep appearances such as Kiss and Twelfth Night. He's also appeared at the 24-Hour Plays, Primary Stages, New York Theater Workshop, Atlantic Theater Company, The Public, and much more. Please welcome to drama, Abubakar Ali.
Hello. Y'all nailed my name pronunciation. I'm very proud, very humbled.
If anyone ever needs to know how to pronounce it, they just have to listen to this episode.
This is the place.
Yes.
This is the place.
Do you go by any nicknames, though?
You know, I struggled with that for a while in terms of, like, I used to always let people know my nickname that my friends would always call me, which is Abu. But I think I've kind of, over time, leaned into, in general, when I meet people, you know, I just say my real name. And then, you know, if we get closer over time, I don't really care. They can call me crap bag and I'm okay with it. I've learned that it's important that when you meet people, for them to kind of know, you know, what your name is, like what the thing your mom and dad endowed you with was.
Why make everyone else adjust?
For sure. Know? For sure. Yeah. And it was like, you know, it was the thing I'd always know. I had so many people over time be like, you thought about changing your name? Have you considered, you know, adjusting that? And, you know,
really?
So you have no idea. It's crazy.
Like in the industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Like professionally, people saying, you know, have you considered changing it to something else? You know, it's been a growing process, just kind of, you know, owning that and kind of acknowledging that.
Wow. Much respect. I feel like that's important.
No one should tell you to change. You should always be you.
I agree. Look at us adults knowing ourselves.
Wow. Now, I was thinking about your name because in Dakar 2000, your character has a nickname. And also your character's name is spelled the same as your real name. Is it not?
It is. It's actually why it's the same name, but pronounced just differently. But it's the exact same name. Yeah, yeah. Which is never, ever going to happen again in my life. And it's never happened. I've not even met a real person in real life with my name. It's wild. Rajiv has given me a gift.
Is this a, you know, that's a Raven moment where Raven is going by Raven? Is this a sister moment where they're going as Tia and Tamara? Is this a Zach and Cody moment? Okay, clearly I'm a Disney boy, but I was kind of shaking and they call you Boobs in the play.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the nickname.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's Boobs. Then you learn. So the characters, that's not his real name, but the character is a Peace Corps volunteer. And I guess Peace Corps volunteers take local names. And he picked the name Boobacar, the short note for Boobs. Yeah.
And I unfortunately did not get to see you in the play. Connor caught it like a week or two ago.
Oh, but great.
As I'm not in New York, I missed it. But I heard it was fantastic.
It's been a lot of fun. So we've been in previews for the last like 2.5 weeks. I'm so, how early in previews did you come?
Okay, it was early. It was like first weekend vibes.
Okay.
And you were holding paper at the start, but I kind of love that in previews. I especially love if I get a chance to go back and see the show again later.
Yeah, yeah, just, of course. Yeah.
It reminds me that theater is a living, breathing art. You know, we grow.
Living,
we grow.
Breathing, changing.
But unfortunately, while you were reading your opening lines, there was someone having a coughing fit like you'd never believe in the audience.
I remember this show.
Listen, we all wanted to go over there and give them some water, escort them out. It was nuts. I felt so bad for you, but you stayed in it. You stayed in.
I stayed. I'm going to tell you from my experience what that show was. So I remember, it was also, we were trying like several new pages, trying to see how it works. I remember being up there and I hear this person having, it was like a bad enough coughing fit where I'm like, okay, do I say, like, it wasn't bad enough to stop the show, but it was bad enough where it's like, I feel like we have to like check in on this person. And at the same time, there was like this civil war in the audience where half the audience was like, hey, are you okay? And half the audience was like, shh, shh. I don't know if they're just trying to get through this monologue.
I felt so bad for you. Oh my God.
It was the most existential I've ever felt in a long time. I was like, dude, yeah, I didn't know what to do. For the first time in my life, I'm like, I had no idea what to do right now.
So did this person recover? Do you guys know?
They never coughed again for the rest of the whole play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They either passed away in that chair or
they're still there.
Got over it. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. No, yeah, it was so good though. I really, really loved the staging. And I don't always love projections, but I loved them in this. Oh my God, not me giving a review. This is so random. I don't normally do this. But I went into it cold. I had no idea really what the play was. You know, I read like a quick description about it and went in. And yeah. You have that natural charm, you. You've really got it. You've got it. The audience was on your side the whole time.
Oh, good. Oh, good. It's a strange play. It's one of those play, every time someone asks me to describe it, I'm like, it's a weird little bird of a play. And it's always kind of interesting to see how different audiences receive this play and how over time through previews it's changed how audiences have kind of, received it in different ways.
Ooh, interesting. Wait, so yeah, do you mind giving us a little, any sort of a tease? Maybe like a flat description of this little bird you've described.
How do I not spoil any aspect of this play? I think it's a play that takes a lot of different turns, and there are a lot of, there's just a lot of like, that's all I'll say. There's a lot of turns within the play. And I think, the play deals a lot with like the concept of truth and how we kind of maneuver the truth to survive in our lives, which kind of re creates ripe grounds for a lot of like what is happening right now, what's going to happen next, which is a lot of fun to watch.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, and some of the things I had read about it too was saying that there may be like a spy thriller angle to it in a
A
way, and
little bit.
that had me
Yeah,
hooked.
there's a little bit of that. It's funny, like I always talk to Mia, who plays the other character in the play, Dina. A lot of people have been saying there's a spy thriller aspect of it, which to me, like, I genuinely am clueless to. I had no idea until everyone's been saying that. And so, it's interesting to see how people are receiving it.
People have also been saying, and this is just as if I'm, in the theater community being like, oh, you got to see it, you got to see it. That there's like giving baby girl vibes, the Nicole Kidman and Harris Dickinson. Have you heard from anyone that Dakar 2000 is the baby girl of the theater season?
I've had someone come up to me and say they came in really expecting that and was surprised that it took kind of turns away from that. While still, it's hard to not live within that world. I think the play deals with, a younger man and an older woman and what that is. But no, yeah, I've heard this. I've
Yeah.
heard this.
I know, I was disappointed when you didn't like bring her a glass of milk and tell her to drink it. You know what I mean?
I haven't seen that movie, but I keep hearing about this glass of milk situation.
Oh, I think you should see it. I recommend it. I really liked it.
I'm scared. I'm like scared. I feel like it'll tarnish my artistic process
It
in
might.
this play. Yeah,
Once the play is through.
exactly. I'm a very serious actor. It's a very
We got a Yale graduate here, Mama. Listen.
it's a delicate line. It's a delicate line.
So we've got opening night. I mean, when people are hearing this, it's probably tomorrow or tonight when they hear it. Do you have your opening night fit picked out?
I'm the worst possible person when it comes to opening night things. I've gone to opening nights before in like a hoodie twice. It's not good. It's not good. I think this might be the first time where I may have to dress up because there's just two of us. So there's no hiding.
Sure. At least a blazer, maybe.
I have like existential crisis when it comes to this. I hate suits. I have like a giant head. And I think when I wear a suit, it really just exasperates the size of this noggin.
Oh my God,
So
that's
I don't know.
hilarious.
Inshallah, we find something to wear, and if we don't, energetically, we're gonna be lux. Energetically, we're gonna carry ourselves in a way that is presentable. Of
Absolutely.
course.
How are you feeling going into it? We dove right into chatting, but we always ask our guests how they're doing in the moment, and we're wondering, are you well?
Am I well? Are any of us well right now? That is the golden question. I'm good, thanks. I'm doing well. It's been a really fun process. It's been kind of a joyful collaboration, which is, it's funny. So this play, we've gone through so many iterations of it. And in any other room, it would be the most difficult thing in the world, I would think. And with this group of people, it's really been like, it's been so much fun. So thankfully, I'm feeling very light. If you talked to me last week, I think I would have been in a worse place. I was in the middle of moving and doing previews, which was a sociopathic thing to do. No one should do this, but I did it.
Well, and you live to see the other side of it all, right? I mean, you're in your new place then.
We're here. Look at us now.
New place and new neighborhood.
Yeah. Oh, not terrible. Like 15 blocks away, new neighborhood, but same concept.
Okay. What inspired you to move? Was it like a better deal or a better place or?
It's funny. So I initially was not going to move. My lease renewal was due on like, I think it was a Friday. And I'd been like looking for places. And I'm a profoundly lazy person and I did not want to. Yeah, I don't want to move. Like I hate moving. It's a torturous thing to do.
Oh, the worst.
And yeah, I've been looking for places and there wasn't anywhere that like inspired me to actually want to make the move. And then the Friday, my thing was due. And I was kind of annoyed because I was paying way too much. Like I was paying way too much for what I was getting. And the Friday, my lease renewal was new. I was due. I asked them, I was like, hey, can I like let you know Monday? And they were like, sure. Sunday, I find an apartment that, again, like I've seen maybe 25 different apartments. There was nothing that like outdid the laziness I feel regarding moving. And I saw one that like changed my mind. I was like, listen, lady, I will pay whatever you need me to pay. I will sign the lease tonight if you can guarantee me this apartment. I like turned into the Godfather as I was negotiating this thing. Never even seen the Godfather, but this was, what I imagined it would be like. And I locked it down and I moved, I think like maybe a week later, a week and a half later.
Oh, that's
Crazy.
impressive. When it's right, it's
Yeah.
right.
Wild. Yeah. When it's right, it's right. And it's always right when it's in the middle of previews. That's if there's any time to move, you do it during previews.
Right.
How long have you been attached to Dakar 2000?
It was a random gift. It kind of came out of nowhere. I was doing Toros at second stage last year, 2023, and Rajiv came to opening night, and I was introduced to him through a friend, and I straight up blacked out. I was so nervous because he's like a player I've been looking up to since I was in high school. So I fully like freaked out, panicked. I put on this act of like, "Hey man, nice to meet you. Good to see you, bro." Though on the inside, I genuinely was like, "I don't know what to say right now. Like, what do I do? Was I horrible tonight? Like, what happened? What is my life?" And maybe like a few months later, he asked me to do a one day reading of it. And I did the reading. I got done with it. And I called people and I was like, I bombed out. That was a disaster. I've embarrassed myself in front of someone I looked up to for years. And like a week later, MTC reached out and they were like, hey, we'd like to ask him to do another workshop and the production in like 9 months. And that was it. That was kind of the shtick of it. And for me, it was like a no-brainer. It was, a player I'd looked up to forever. And, it's a two-hander. It's a great theater. And it's like a weird little play, which I love. I love kind of odd plays. Toros the Second Stage was another like very weird, strange play. It's fun to work on that kind of thing, especially in a new play process.
Oh yeah, I'll bet. So how involved was the writer throughout this process?
Incredibly involved. First read-through was a different play than a week before. Almost every week we were kind of constantly trying new pages, changing the play. I mean, every week was almost completely different draft. It was like in conversation with us. And May, our director, told me like this is kind of how Rajiv works, where it's a lot of like rewriting, a lot of kind of adjusting things, working with the actors. So he was, incredibly involved up until to locking the show.
Was Mia part of it as well back then?
Yes. Yeah. It was me and Mia for that read through, that one day read through that I thought I bombed. Which
Yeah.
I think I did bomb, but they're very kind.
Being a two-hander, I mean, do you feel that pressure?
It's a little bit. It's weird. Like it's fine. I did a four-person play in Toros, and I remember we used to have this conversation after shows where we'd be like, "Oh, tonight's a Toro sh a night. Tonight's a Andrea night. Tonight's a Juan night," which are the three characters in that play. You kind of see how with these small cast shows, energy is so important. And an audience's relationship to the story, an audience's relationship to your character can shift with just like slight shifts on stage, which is scary at first, but then eventually you kind of give into it and decide, hey, I'm going to walk onto the stage tonight and just play pretend with my partner and, we'll see what happens. You kind of have to really yield to the gods, to the theater gods when you're doing that.
That's kind of thrilling.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's the scariest thing on earth at first, and then eventually you kind of try to relax into
I'm curious now about when you first got into the theater. We do ask all of our guests
it.
about the Ring of Keys moment, that moment when you were maybe watching something. It could have been a theater piece or it could have been a movie or TV, whatever it might be, when you were like, oh, I'm into this. I'm identifying. I need to get involved. Do you feel like you had one of those?
I had like two separate ones. I had one, I mean, the way that the launching pad was kind of ridiculous. I was in like a drama class because I wanted to go into film school at first. And I was in a drama class. I had no intention of ever pursuing this. It was just kind of to bulk up my resume for film school. And I had a teacher just literally he told me, come to his office. I walked in, scared, thinking I'd like fuck something up. And he was like, you should consider pursuing this professionally. And my impressionable 16-year-old self was like, okay, let's do it. Fine. I jumped into it. But I think the moment that I took it seriously was I was talking about this with y'all earlier, but I saw it once on Broadway, and I saw it. I walked out and I walked to a Starbucks bathroom and cried for 45 minutes. I was in the Starbucks bathroom for 45 minutes crying, and I think that was kind of like the first moment where I was like, okay, this is something that can, really change your relationship to this world, to life.
Oh, totally. Wait, what inspired you to see once?
I was looking at like grad programs, and I knew the lead of it had gone to like NYU. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll go see, what the NYU graduate program is represented like on Broadway. And that was it. And I saw it. That show fucked me up. Literally 45 minutes in a Starbucks bathroom in Times Square crying.
I mean, I don't blame you. I like anytime I even listen to the cast album, I just get full body chills. It's so amazing.
It is so good. And it doesn't feel like a right. musical. Nah, not like feeling like a musical is a bad thing, but it just feels like its own thing, its own mm-hmm. beast.
Beautiful art, life-changing art can do that, yeah. you know? Yeah. Oh, I love yeah. it. Do you sing a lot?
I do.
You do?
I do. I hide this, but I do. I do. I tell people, I'm like, I think I'm like a bullshit singer. I think I can like con you into thinking I can sing. Like my brain is this. There's like people who can like sing. Like there's like the Aaron Tveits. They're like the people who can really sing the fuck out of anything. And then there's like people who can like act through a song where it's like, oh yeah, they can carry a note, but they're not, you know what I mean? They're not hitting high Bs. They're not belting high Bs 8 times a week.
I'll say like, you know? Daniel Radcliffe, and he's not going to hear this. You know, he's someone yeah, that I would yeah, say exactly. would fill that category.
Exactly. Even like a Raul Esparza, who's an incredible singer, but he's not like someone who can like whip out a pop record and like, you know what I mean? It's yeah. like soaring high notes 8 times a week. You know, it's, so I think that, I think I can distract enough from my my lack of abilities as a singer, which has gotten me very far somehow, thankfully.
Because when you went to NYU, right?
For my undergrad, yeah.
For undergrad, what program did you study there?
I was in Atlantic for my first 2 years, and then I did classical for my third year, which was like the best year of my life. It was amazing.
What made it so?
Yeah, I'm curious.
It's a year where it's like 18 of y'all, and you're just doing Shakespeare, which sounds like it would be miserable, but it was like the most perfect place on earth. It was like the same teachers for all 18 of us, and they all cared deeply about us. And I met a teacher there who like, I think my life would be a very different life if it was not for this teacher I met there. His name is Orlando Pabotoy, and he taught clown. And he just, you know, he like softened me up as a person in a really beautiful way.
Wow. And was this your first time away from home?
Yeah. It was the worst fucking years of my life. The first 2 years at NYU were the hardest thing on earth. Because, you know, I was like getting over someone, so that obviously added to it.
Mm.
And it was just like, you know, it's hard. Like New York is hard, I think, when you're away from your family and you're, you know, you're 18 years old and you're in a place that's telling you like, stand like this, talk like this, you know, act like, do the thing that you love like this. It's jarring, and it can really make it a difficult thing to do.
Change your name.
Yeah. Change your fucking name. You know, all these things, it adds up.
Yeah. I can't even imagine New York at 18.
I could barely handle it when I was done with college. I was like, what? This place is fun to visit, but am I meant to live here? Like it's crazy. Took a few years to adjust.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's fun. Like, I think there is like an aspect of New York when you're 18 and like you're fresh eyed and you're like excited about it all. There's an aspect of it that is like really exciting and you can kind of ride that wave. But I will say New York coupled with acting school as an 18-year-old specifically is really hard. Because I think like New York forces you to like learn more about yourself. It forces you to explore different parts of yourself and grow as a person. But at the same time, when you're in acting school, especially those first 2 years, they're kind of veering you in a very specific way to be a certain kind of person, to, you know, stand a certain way, phonate a certain way, talk a certain way, all those things. And those things are at odd with each other. And it can be hard.
And then has New York been home ever since then though?
No, I was in LA for a few years and then I was in grad school and then I came to New York and I had a place here, but I was gone for work for like two and a half years. And then it's been home for like the last 2 years, which has been amazing.
Yeah. And where does your family live now?
My mom is in NorCal where she's a professor in electrical engineering.
Wow.
I know.
God, how legit is that?
I know. She's a legit. She's a contributing member of society. She's not a degenerate like us.
I know. I'm like, wow.
And my sister is in LA.
Okay. Because you grew up in California.
I grew up in Egypt. I was 9. Oh, and then, And then we moved to LA when I was 9.
How much of growing up in Egypt shaped your understanding of pop culture? Because you mentioned film school might have been an interest to you. Was that like film an interest that came into your life when you were living in Egypt?
No, you know, it's funny. I would say it kind of stunted my pop culture references in general. I think just because, you know, it's a different world, obviously, when I was there. You know, we watched a lot of like Disney movies. So I came to the States a big Disney kid. That was kind of the shtick. But I will say like in life, it helped me a lot in that like when I came here, I kind of had to be ready for anything. And we moved here and, you know, September, it was like right around September 11th, which really, you know, for me, my family, my community in general, forced us to kind of have to adapt in a very different way to, you know, to America and to life here. And I think, you know, ever since then, I think I've always been a really just adaptable person. I've always been great with change, I think, because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine.
So growing up in LA, were you around people who were like going on auditions, you know, doing the like young acting thing, or was it not so much like that?
No, like, you know, it's weird. It wasn't until after school that I realized how much of LA was like the acting world. Because when I was there, I mean, I was in like the East Side. I was near like Pasadena, Glendale, that whole area, which is like devoid of Hollywood and all that. So I didn't know anyone who was in that world. When I got out of school, it was the first time in LA where people would ask me, oh, where are you from? Like, where did you move from? Which was so, it was a foreign concept. But I guess now I'm a part of that shit in New York because I ask everyone, where are you from here?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, so it goes.
I know.
The circle of life.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. When you mentioned you moved back to LA, was that for one of your numerous television gigs? I mean, you're known to do an arc on a television series.
Yeah, I am. No, I was in LA out of undergrad, just honestly, for it was just those years where you're kind of, you know, finding your life and kind of putting everything together. I was, you know, auditioning. I was doing a lot of like random commercials. I was working in this regional theater over there called A Noise Within, which is where I got my equity card. And I did that for like 3 years before school. And those were kind of the years where it's like, those are the years that nobody talks about, where you're kind of doing something that no one really recognizes. No one in the industry is quite, you know, no one knows what you're talking about when you mention it. But I grew so much in those years and just kind of, you know, doing, you know, 6 shows a week playing, you know, Soldier Number 3 in the Scottish play and, you know, watching other people do their thing. But yeah, that was kind of the time that I spent in LA. I was there like during the pandemic for a little bit, but I was, you know, I was doing nothing, as we all were.
You're putting words to something that Connor and I refer to as the lost years. We all have a lost year or two or three.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That seems random, but in the grand spectrum of your life, it was pivotal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I totally, Dylan, I was thinking the same thing because I moved to New York with Dylan right after undergrad. And then I was like, I love this. I want to be here, but I kind of feel like I want to move back home, save some money, try some other things.
I know.
So that year and a half was like working in fitness. I was a substitute teacher for a while. Like really just growing up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. But that shit is so important because everyone always points at, like, the big shiny stuff. Everyone's always like, oh, like, oh my God, like you're doing all this, da, 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 all this stuff. And it's like, those are the years that matter. Those are the years that, like, I think everyone needs to fucking know about. Cause you know, it's not all pretty. It's not all the glitz. It's not all like, you know, the positive. There's a lot of shit that goes into it.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk to you about some of your TV experiences. I have to mention this. I was looking through your Instagram, doing my deep dive of your career and life and whatnot. I don't think there was a single post that I came across that didn't include someone who was obsessed with you on Law and Order, Organized Crime, and had to tell you about it. I don't know if you read comments. Holy shit. That is a diehard fan base. I had no idea.
I literally, I'll be very blunt with you. When I signed on to do it, I just thought it was a job. Like for me, I was like, okay. You know, it was like right at the end of the strike that they asked me to do it. And it was wonderful. It was a blessing. It was great. But I had no idea how many people watched this show. I mean, I was signing up for a gym, and the person who was signing me up that day was like, the second he found out I did that, he hooked it up beyond belief. I could not believe it. The first class I took at the gym, the lady teaching, I was like, you look familiar. I had no idea. Yeah, this it's a thing. I'm, you know, this is a different world than where I operate.
Network television, oh my God. I guess, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Christopher Maloney's, this is his spinoff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is, yeah, yeah.
Should I tap in and watch your arc? I haven't seen it, to be honest with you.
If that's something you want, yeah. If it's something you
Connor
want
gets
to
scared. Connor gets scared at crime.
I get scared. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's too real.
Yeah, it's, I think some people, like my sister and her husband watch that stuff all the time. It just kind of depends what your vibe is.
My vibe is Katie Keene, which I don't know if you got the notification that I accidentally liked an old Katie Keene post of yours today really? While doing research. Oh, I did unlike it immediately after being.
I sent it to Connor. I was like, wait, Connor, that was him. I'm Katie Keene. Connor's like, oh shit, well, I just liked the post.
I'm like, so. Double tap.
That was like my first, like, that was probably like one of my first jobs out of school. Yeah, it was crazy. And I did it for like maybe 5-6 months. And my favorite thing of it was we did a week where we were working with Bernadette Peters.
Oh, yeah.
And I will never forget. I didn't say a single word to her because I was panicked the whole time. She was literally next to me for a week in our cast chairs. Maybe said a grand total of 3 words, but I'll never forget.
Did you absorb anything, any wisdom from her?
No, she was pretty sweet. She was pretty sweet. She was very kind of, you know, relaxed, very easy to be around. I was just freaking out on the inside. I mean, everyone else was like engaging with her, taking pictures. I could not say a word. She was rehearsing for Old Friends on our floor. And you know, I shot my shot, which, and my shot was literally just saying, "Hey, you definitely don't remember me. We worked together for a week, da, 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 da." And that was the end of the conversation.
You had to, because maybe she'll remember you next
I had
time.
to do something.
Yeah,
exactly. No, she won't remember me, but it's nice to know that I put it out there.
What I loved about Katie Keene was there was a lot of theater people from Broadway in general on that. Like Daphne Rubin Vega was on that show, and Helena York.
Helena York, Andre DeShields. A lot of people. Peter Francis James, I think he did an episode. A lot of people.
And that filmed in New York, so that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
And it's
it
very
did.
yeah. And the writers' room was huge theater fans, which you know I think they did like a we did a Kiss of the Spider Woman episode. It was
Yes.
a lot of theater stuff. Yeah.
Oh, how funny. So that was pre-COVID. Was Walking Dead World Beyond pre-COVID as well?
Walking Dead was right as like productions were picking up. Productions I think started picking up like maybe November of 2020, and
Okay.
that was I think January is when it started of 2022.
Okay.
Oh, right. Okay, because when we met at
Yeah,
Tyler's, actually, I remember you were talking to Jelani. This is suddenly flashing in
that's where I
my.
met him. Yeah, that's where we
Yeah.
became friends. Yeah, I love Jelani. He's so wonderful,
Oh,
so
man.
talented.
Oh, yeah. How did you meet Tyler Ellis?
Tyler, how did I meet Tyler? I think we were both doing a fundraiser. There was like it was a Dylan Mulvaney was doing. It was a 365 Days of Girlhood. It was a fundraiser, but I was on stage for some of it, and then we met at the after party, and we became friends to the back. I love that human being. He's just good energy, good person, and that's you know that's what you look for in people and in friends.
Yes, he's like the
Truly the
great
sweetest.
connector. He's really
Yeah,
amazing.
yeah, yeah. He's a good one. He's a sweet one.
I know we texted him. We were like, "Oh my God, you'll never guess who we're having on the pod." Actually, we also texted Michael Breslin and Patrick Foley, and we were like, "Oh my
Oh
God,"
God. Have y'all
because
talked to them yet or no?
yeah, we talked to
Oh
them.
yeah.
I want to say it was in our second, maybe our first or second year of podcasting. And they're
Oh
like, we
yeah.
really hit it off, and they're gonna come
Right.
back and talk about this musical that they're writing that is happening
Yeah.
this spring. We
Oh
love
my God.
them. You can't throw a stone without hitting somebody that they know in this town.
Yeah, they know everyone. They're so much fun. They're the best. They're
Oh,
chaotic, hilarious. They're the
yes.
best. They're so great. Oh, I didn't know y'all interviewed them. I'll have to listen to
You'll have to listen to
this.
the new one. The new one, not the
The
old
new
one,
one.
is
Yeah,
sort of this chaotic moment in time. We'll leave it at that.
then I
But
need to listen to that's the one I need to listen to.
so you were in their class, like in that era?
Yeah, so Michael was a dramaturg in my class, and Patrick was an actor of the year on top of me. That's kind of where I got to know them, those Pulitzer Prize finalist
Oh, it's like
winners.
crazy. Well, I mean, you've a lot of really, really cool alumni from that program in general.
It's a wonderful big extended family of people.
And you're one of them.
Literally, do you feel like seeking that higher education, like going and doing it, was a worthwhile experience?
I personally don't think anyone should be in acting school as an undergrad. And I only say that with hindsight. And this was at least my experience. I think so much of this job and so much of what we do is about kind of knowing who you are. And I think when you're, 17, 18, and this is very like tender, open-eyed age where, you're just learning so much about the world. I think to have someone actively telling you, like, stand like this, talk like this, do this beautiful thing that you have a beautiful, soft relationship to, do it like this. I think it just tarnishes a very special thing that is the thing that eventually will get you the job. And I found, at least in my experience at that young age, I wish I just kind of did plays for fun, found the thing that made it fun for me and just did that without any outside, interference. And then as I kind of got to know more about myself and got older and really, quote unquote, matured by the time you're 25, which, hopefully you're mature by then. I think that was a good time for me to take that thing that I love doing that I found my way into and then massage it and then have outside interference, involved with it. So I think, yeah, I think like grad school was helpful in that sense because I think I went in kind of having this thing that I really love and having my own approach to it and my own relationship to it. And then in a small kind of safe environment, had people work with me to adjust in, to kind of grow it, but never releasing that special thing that I came in with,
Yeah, I think that's really insightful. I really do.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I saw my fiance go through his musical theater program, and they make you go to really vulnerable places at 18, 19 years
Yeah.
old. And
Yeah. And that's the reason I hesitated saying it. Just, I know there's so many people who probably listen to this. Some people, we're all people. We've all done it. But I do think there's something really beautiful about just finding what makes it fun for you and just letting that grow as much as possible until you kind of know who you are.
Yeah. Okay, wait, Connor usually asks this question and sometimes I laugh, but I'm so curious about this for you. What is like your dream? Like you've done so many amazing things so far and you know who you are now and you're leading plays left and right. Do you have a dream that you're striving towards career-wise, I should say?
No, you know, I'll be very honest with you. I think I've always been of the school like work begets work.
Hmm.
And I think I've learned over time, this is a job where you kind of have to be very open to the universe and kind of go wherever you can go. And the only thing you can control is the work that you do and how well you do it. So I think for me, obviously, you know, the dream is to just be able to keep making a living in this thing and to be able to, you know, grow from there and sustain that for as long as possible and forever, if possible, and to grow old doing it. I think that is the dream. I've always shied away from being like, I want to do like, you know, I want to do this movie. I want to work with da da da. I want to da da da. So I think those things will happen if you just put out good energy and just do the best work you can in every possible opportunity you get, and just like put good energy out there and try to be a good person as much as you can whenever you can.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love it. Wait, I feel like I want you to be Fiero and Wicked.
That's really funny. That would be fun. That would be fun. That would be fun. That would be fun.
I'm manifesting that for you. I'm manifesting.
That's very sweet of you. That's very sweet. I would love to wear those pants. I would love to wear the Fiero pants.
And just, I mean,
just do a photo shoot in them and then we can call it a day. You know, that's, I'm good with that. It would be fun. It would be fun. The show, it's so fucking good.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I know.
But I feel like you've done like an actor's bingo of things. Like you've had like love scenes in TV shows like Katie Keene, or, you know, kind of Afterglow type thing. You've died on screen in Law and Order. Can we talk about your death?
Yes. Yes, you can.
What was that like? This is, of course, you know, anyone who's already seen it has seen it. Did you know your character was going to die?
I did.
Okay.
I got shot in the head, right? What was it? I can't remember it. Wait, you're talking, wait, did you say Law and Order or Walking Dead?
Oh, you died in two different shows.
Yeah, a Law and Order. That's a different, it was an amazing, it was so much fun. It was a great job. It was like, to be very blunt with you, it was one, I'd signed on for 5 episodes and they'd asked me to continue with it, but there was just a schedule, something came up. There was just a scheduling thing and I couldn't do it. And it's why when you watch the show, I'm thriving and alive in one episode. And the next episode, they're like, he has died. It was one of those that I couldn't continue with.
Well, that's what a lot of the comments are. The people missed, like they fell in love with you.
Yeah, a lot of people were like, what the fuck happened? Why did he die? But that was, you know, logistically what it was. But I also think, I'm sure because of that incredible writer's room, that it served the story in a great way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure other characters had like their own arc of like dealing with the grief.
Exactly.
And how they couldn't, you know.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. Wait, can we talk about Grendel?
Sure. Yeah.
Did you guys finish filming the whole series and then it just never, the post-production just never happened and stuff?
Yeah, we shot 8 episodes of it, which was the whole thing. And they did, I believe, post-production on the first 2 episodes and then rough cuts for the rest of it. I've seen all of it, actually, which is kind of amazing.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah, it was great. You know, it's one of those, it's become so normal now. It's like a thing that happens now in the industry where it's just, you know, projects will, because, you know, taxes or whatever the fuck, projects will be dropped, which was hard. You know, it was like a really hard thing to go through just because, you know, I put in so much energy, so much time, so much, you know, it was a lot. And it was an incredible group of people that worked on it, incredible crew. So it was hard for that work to not be celebrated. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, eventually you learn with this job that everything very likely will fail. So you just kind of, you got to keep moving forward and hope for the best. And, you know, when it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
Yeah. I think your perspective on it is really cool. And the statements you put out afterwards and everything, I think were important.
Yeah. And it took a lot for me to, you know, I'm in a very mature place right now. You're seeing a wise version of me. There was a lot of time where I was like, I want to burn buildings to the ground right now. I want to punch something. This is absurd. How? Da, da, da. There was a lot of that. But I think eventually you kind of just see the bigger picture with these things.
Well, I appreciate you speaking about it so candidly.
Yeah, of course.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry we won't get to watch it, but I'm glad you got to.
That's okay. We could do a private screening one day with friends. Do it with friends. I got you.
Oh, thank you. That's all I wanted you to say. Obviously teeing you up there.
Of course.
Have you had a chance to see anything that's been on the Broadway or off-Broadway stages this season over the last, like, I don't know, 6 to 9 months?
I saw I don't know if y'all saw this, Nightside Songs, I think it was called. It was by the Lazurs, who wrote We Live in Cairo, which is in the Lyric Theater Workshop in Slam.
Yes. And Patrick's boyfriend is one of the Lazurs, no?
I know. And fun story, I introduced the two of them.
Oh, my gosh.
They've been together for 4 years, and I am the reason those two are together. And I will ride that to my grave.
Oh, my. You matchmaker, you.
I know. The cutest couple on earth. You're welcome, world.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I saw this musical they wrote, and it's about like dealing with disease. And it centers on a woman who I think she got cancer. I believe that's kind of what it is. And it was one of the best things I've seen in a long time. This was like an under the radar festival situation. So it wasn't like fully staged. It wasn't fully funded. It was just kind of, you know, black box kind of situation. And it was one of the best things I've seen in a long time. And it's similar to Once in that it really doesn't feel like a musical. It's its own kind of theatrical experience. And you have to see it. It's in Philadelphia right now. It's coming to ART after. And
ooh, okay.
I hope it comes to New York. It's incredible. It is so good. Yeah, it's worth seeing. It's worth seeing. Yeah, yeah.
We do ask all of our guests for a dose of drama. This is a little pop culture recommendation. It could be something you've been binge watching, a book you've been reading, something you want to tell everybody to go see, you know, put that energy out into the world. Well, I'll share one. But Dylan, do you want to kick it off?
Gosh, well, I did mention that we saw Antony at this Miami Food and Wine Festival over the weekend. And it's ironic because Hunter and I just finished watching the most recent season of Queer Eye. Yes, y'all, it is still airing and it is still great. And there's
good.
A new cast member. Yeah, there's a new member of the Fab Five. His name is Jeremiah. He replaced the beloved Bobby, he was like the design expert on the show. And I have to say, I loved Bobby, but it's been very refreshing. And this whole season takes place in Vegas. So it's a lot of people who work in the entertainment industry or maybe used to or in and around it. It is really, really great. And it was very fun. And anyone who wants like heartwarming content right now, I do feel like Queer Eye is still delivering that in a really refreshing way.
It's nice. Ooh, I'm glad to hear it. I should watch it. I feel like it would be fun if they refreshed the whole cast.
Next season they should replace another person, and then, you know, maybe eventually there'll be like a full turnover. But
yeah, because I mean,
some people
love
I do
them.
Think are collecting a check on that show. But,
name them.
Tune into Drama Plus on that one.
Get on that Close Friends.
Hell yeah! Hell yeah!
Exactly.
Antony was so hot in real life. I was he like winked at the crowd at one point.
Star energy.
I feel it. I feel it. I feel it. I feel it. That was good. For the sake of switching it up, I went to go see Challengers at the movie theater again. They released it on Valentine's Day. And I went as like a little treat to myself, like a self-date. Sold out screening. The crowd went wild. They applauded at different kissing scenes, at different, you know, athletic moments. At the end, which not to spoil the end of Challengers, but you're really lit up by the end of it. Crowd was on their feet screaming, applauding. It was one of the wildest things I've ever seen in my entire life.
Challengers on Valentine's Day is a choice. That is a choice.
Yeah, it was.
Connor was cruising for a date, maybe.
Oh my God.
Connor was going through it.
I was. Listen.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe Challengers didn't get nominated for any Oscars. That's probably my like true dose of drama. Like it was so good. It was so good. The score
at
was
least score.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Oh,
that's fair.
My God. I'm bummed. But anyway, let's close it up. Do you have a dose of drama to end our episode with?
I've been like randomly, I keep listening to interviews with Dick Van Dyke, which is
that's so random.
I know. It started from a space. So like and the play kind of deals with this feeling of like, are we in the worst timeline right now? Like, is this the end of the world? And then there's the question of like, I feel like every generation thinks it's like worse than it's ever been. And I listened to one interview with him where he was like, he's 100 years old. He's like, I've been alive for 100 years old. And this is the worst it's ever been. And I do think that this feels like the end, which freaked me out and just made me listen to more interviews with him. But the concept of someone who's been around for 100 years, you know, and has seen some of the worst atrocities in, you know, human history, is saying that right now is as bad as it's ever been is freaked me out, but made me want to dive into more.
I know. Yeah, those are the people we should be listening to, the ones who can look back on history.
I know.
2020 vision. I mean, I'm sure his vision isn't 2020.
Well, who among us?
You know, yeah. God, I love him. He is truly like a living legend, and he just won like some Emmys in the fall, right?
That's wild.
Things do feel horrifically bleak in a way that I literally just say to everybody, like, what do we do?
I mean, I don't know. What do you do? I know. We talk about theater Yeah, exactly. We listened to your podcast. I didn't even tell you all this. I literally was so nervous at the top of this. I should have said this after we wrapped, but fuck it. I was so nervous coming to this podcast because I've been listening to y'all.
What?
Like the longest fucking time. I swear to God, like literally every time, like y'all got me through this move. Every time I was going to see an apartment in like all the way in fucking Brooklyn, I'm in Manhattan. I was entertaining the concept of Brooklyn. And I would go and you would get me through these subway rides. So I'm literally coming into this. I was like, I could not believe that I'm about to talk to these people.
I'm blushing.
I kid you not. I was shocked.
Oh my God.
I was shocked when y'all said that you wanted to talk. I could not believe this.
Listen.
Oh my God.
I'm speechless now. I'm blushing. That is so, so kind. That's so nice to hear.
That's what we want, is to entertain people while they're like going about their lives. They feel like they're just listening to people chat and, you know, getting them through it. I'm so happy. Thank you for listening. And also thank you for coming on.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you for having me. I could not believe it. I literally was like, the drama podcast is reaching to me. Abukar Ali, Abubakar, if you pronounce it correctly. Could not believe it.
Abubakar, you are so sweet and insightful. And now this episode is going to maybe touch someone else in the same way that maybe previous ones had gotten you through things. So,
Oh, good.
That means a lot. That makes me laugh to know that you were nervous because you're so chill. Your energy is so chill and cool.
Oh, no. The deep panic is constantly happening inside this false facade.
Well, you are so lovely and so talented. Everybody needs to go see you in Dakar 2000. You never know what to expect. It takes twists and turns and, you know, there might be a shirtless scene. It really is wild. Oh, the wow. Whole thing. It's wild. There's music. There's buckets of beer. There's, you know, you really feel the vibe. And
hopefully no coughing.
There's something for everyone. Hopefully no coughing attacks where Abubakar has to decide whether to stop the show or right. not.
I wondered, I was like, is he going to stop the show? It did cross my mind.
I genuinely was about to. Like a part of me, because, you know, that opening monologue is, you know, it's fairly conversational. I was that close to it, but it just wasn't like a big enough, like I was like, if I stop it, I could put this person in a bad situation.
Yeah.
You powered through like a professional.
Yes.
We made it. Training.
Yes.
We'll break a leg with opening night.
Thank you.
And then you'll be able to just settle into your new digs and really just ride out the rest of the run. It's going to be great.
I can be a person very soon.
Now, where do you want everybody to follow you online and what platforms?
Don't follow me on Twitter because I made it private and I probably will delete it very soon.
Awesome.
I'm on Instagram and TikTok. That's it. But my TikTok, like a warning, it's just me like fucking around and trolling when I'm bored at work. So like, you know, lower your expectations.
That's where the fun content is then. So we'll drop the links below for everyone to follow you there. Everyone should be following us if they're not already. We're at the Drama Podcast. Connor is at Connor McDowell. I'm at Dylan McDowell. And Abubakar, this was so much fun. Thank you for joining us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. And Connor, I will see you next time. Drama.